You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
I look at the bartender and I go, is this candy complimentary? She goes, yeah, it is. And I go, well, that explains why it said I had nice eyes.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas. This is the social hour. On today's show, intuitive hypnotherapist Chelsea Albert. And now your host. He believes hypnotism really works because he remembers what it was like watching Spice Girls music videos back in the day. Dees Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Dees. Thanks for coming back around, hanging out. We appreciate you being here, guys. If, as always, if you like what you hear, tell a friend, rate us and review us on whatever podcast app you listen to us on. And I am back weekly again, guys. I kept making this promise I was going to get back to doing my weekly episodes. And it took me a year, but by God damn it, 2024, I told you we're doing it, and we're doing it. So we've made it into March with a week, episode every week, so here's hoping we can make it the rest of the year. Guys, as usual, go to deescomedy.com, check out everything going on across the network, live dates coming up soon. For the rest of March, I'm pretty much local. If you want to see me, you're probably going to have to come to San Antonio to catch a live show. After that, I will be all over. Tour kicking off in April in the Northwest. I'll be back up cruising through the Pacific Northwest. They asked me to start doing this tour in January in the Northwest. I said, call me when you got some sun. I'm not doing the snow. I'm not doing the cold. That's why I left that place. So, April, you can find me all over the Northwest. I'll be through Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana. I do have some dates in Texas and New Mexico in April also. And then just be hitting the road all over the country. So check it out. Go to deescomedy.com. Tickets are on sale now and moving. So don't wait too long. And also, guys, I've been neglecting to remind everyone who hasn't seen it yet. The new special, Not Your Cup of Tea, is available now. If you haven't gotten it yet, you can still get it at the website. It is all donation based, so you can pay whatever you want for that special. Get the whole hour, you get to keep it forever, watch it as many times as you want. And yeah, for as little as a buck, man. Dick move, but you can do it. Otherwise, that's it, guys. That's all the advertising. You know what to do. We are going to get into it with our guest today. Very happy to have her here. She's all the way from Tennessee. She is an intuitive hypnotherapist. Please welcome Chelsea Albert. Chelsea, how you doing?
I am so good, Dees. I am stoked to be talking with you today. I feel you on the cold thing, man. I've got thin California blood. It's that's one thing I'll never get used to.
I can't do it. Like, I always forget, too. Tennessee does get very cold in the winter. And I just, like, I lived in Eastern Washington for the last 10 years. And I just one day realized, I'm like, why do I live here? I hate the cold. And people are always like, oh, Washington. They just think Seattle. And I'm like, no. Like, Eastern Washington, for 6 months out of the year, it's 0 degrees or below. There's a foot of snow on the ground. It's terrible. So I just am like, why do I live here? I need to go. And then I just packed up my shit and moved to Texas. And it's warm. And there's, it's a little less homogenized. There's a little more diversity, which is nice. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, my friends always joke, if they could just, like, if I could build myself a little terrarium and just sit on my rock with a sun lamp, I would be happy. It's Tennessee. I have to say, though, like, I love the rain out here. I'm good if it's warm rain. And it's really rainy out here in the summers, but there's water falling from the sky and nobody's charging me for it. I don't know how nobody sees this as a miracle out here.
Yeah, it's why Tennessee is an interesting, that whole Midwest area, like I always forget how much I like it until I'm out there. yeah, because I just never think of it. Like I really, we were talking before the mics heated up, like I just don't go east a lot. There's a lot of places east that I don't love. Like I don't love the landscape. The people don't entice me. It's just nothing about it really does much for me. I think Florida's a beautiful state, minus the people. Outside of that, it's just kind of, yeah, it's not my thing. But every time in Tennessee, it's like, God, just beautiful landscapes, beautiful hiking, beautiful outdoors. People are always great. So.
And Nashville's got a pretty decent comedy scene as far as I know. I haven't.
Yeah. Actually, I got a couple buddies that live in Nashville. They love it. I haven't been out there since they moved, but I've been through Nashville. Actually, I do some stuff in been through Chattanooga a couple times. Yeah. Which is a funny little town, but you know, fun. Knoxville, stuff like that. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, the cold is no thanks. My neighbors here think I'm nuts because I mean it gets hot in San Antonio. We get, you know, for 4 or 5 months it's triple digits, right? And half that time it's very humid, the other half is just arid. And I'll be outside working, running around doing the yard, and my neighbors are hiding in the shade and they think I'm nuts.
Yeah, that's I've noticed Southerners don't, it's either way too hot or way too cold. There's no in between, but there's a lot of cold weather people out here. So it's, you know, I just stay in my little hidey hole during winter, godforsaken states, from the month of December to February.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I love it.
It's great. There you go. Yeah. See, it's that, you know, it's like that 80-20 rule. You know, if it's good 80% of the time, you live with it. Yeah. Exactly. It's always funny. Looks like when I lived in the Northwest, people always complained about how cold it was. And then down here, everyone complains about how hot it is. And I just want to look at everyone and be like, you can move. There's so many states with so many climates. There's other countries you can move to, actually. Like, you know, they're paying people to move to parts of Italy. Like, you can move.
Right. I mean, honestly, I got to say, I do have a slight distrust for anyone who willingly moves to Minnesota and stays there.
I agree.
You know, you chose this. There's got to be something a little tweaked.
Right. Yeah, my cousin who grew up in California with me, then lived in Hawaii for a while, and then moved to South Dakota. I'm like, what happened? Are you okay? Are you in a cult?
Twice, I don't know.
Yeah, right? Like, what's happening? Well, I don't know.
Oh, man, too funny.
So how did you end up in Tennessee from California?
So actually, my ex-husband wanted to come to school out in Murfreesboro. So, yeah, it's always a man, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were living in California. And honestly, I don't know if you ever felt this way, but I love California. It's a great state to visit, great place, you know, for a lot of different reasons.
Sure.
But I just never really identified with, especially the Southern California kind of hustle, grind, keeping up with the Joneses. Everyone's working three jobs just to survive.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, in California, we're not assholes. We just don't have time to be nice.
Yeah.
We're on our way to our second job. Just don't mess with us. And then we got to fight traffic to get there. So I was like, okay, well, I guess Tennessee. And then that whole kind of thing is sort of tied up into like my career story. But basically, you know, when that all fell apart, he fucked off and I decided to make my life out here. And honestly, Tennessee's been really good to me. My parents just moved out here. So I finally got them over. And honestly, yeah, I will say I've been loving it here. I've been loving building a life. And it's always good to live in a state different from where you're born, I think. And I've kind of realized that. Like, it just gives you a whole different perspective because California kind of has its own little, its own little mental bubble. Just like, okay, well, why would you move anywhere besides California?
Yeah.
Well, because there are places in the world.
Yeah, well, because people in California are too self-absorbed to think about anything else generally, you know.
Yeah.
I think the pollution, the air pollution also rots their brain.
It does something to you, man.
Yeah. So there's that whole thing too. I mean, I know so many people that have thought about moving out of California I think part of the fear is that once you leave, like, if you have a house already, if you leave, like you can't come back because you'll never be able to afford anything again, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But I'll tell you, no state income taxes is quite delightful. I
well,
will.
Yeah. Well, now California is taxing people after you leave. There, so yeah, if you move away for like a couple years, I don't remember how long, but for a couple years after you leave, they still want a piece of whatever you're making. It's like this is which is nuts, you know?
Yeah, it's a whole California's a it's a mindset for sure. There's a whole culture around it, and it's, you know, every state I guess has that to some degree. But man, I do notice that there are a lot of Californians coming out here.
Yeah.
You know, which the locals are none too thrilled about. But
yeah, well,
I always say, look, I'm not.
What's that?
I was just gonna say I'm one of the good Californians. I always like to tell Nashville locals, I'm like, look, you know, I came out here before 2020. I was out here since like 2015.
Yeah.
I'm not the one ruining real estate values here. Right. Okay, I rent as well.
Yeah, I help your real estate values. The yeah, it's what I always tell people though. I go, the people who are moving to these places like Texas or Tennessee or Montana and stuff like that, I go, they're just the grandkids of people who moved to California 60 years ago. So like,
ooh, I like that.
And they are, because I mean, I know so many people who's like, their second, you know, my dad's Mexican, he's from Mexico. That's fucking like, I was born in California. He was born not in California, but I mean, I think, yeah. But I mean, so many people have just their grandparents or parents, or they're just a couple generations removed of people who all moved to California in the 40s through the 60s, you know?
Yeah. I gotta say, that actually kind of brings up an interesting idea. I think they're like, we're kind of all in a flux right now. You know, you're right. With the generational change,
yeah,
there's going to be geographical change too. So do you think that San Antonio will be your last stop, or?
Yes, and let me. I would say yes and no, because like I think my last stop will be another country.
Ooh.
So
where would you go?
Well, I've Costa Rica.
Nice.
I go there quite a bit and over the years. Central America in general, but Costa Rica a lot, and I've been looking at property there for years. So I don't think I'll ever permanently leave America, but I think it would be a split of time, you know, 50-50 or so, depending on what I was doing. But yeah, otherwise I would never say never, but I don't know anywhere else in America that I would really want to go. You know, I mean, it may be somewhere a little further out of San Antonio with more property, but I mean, definitely not. I don't see myself ever going back to California. I don't want to be somewhere cold. Unless I decided to finally start that cult, then maybe somewhere in deep Nevada, or, you know, New Mexico, somewhere in the deserts of Arizona, something like that. But I'm a Southwest guy. I love the desert. I love the heat. So, I couldn't see myself going to any other place in America as a like living.
I get that. Okay. Now I'm curious about this cult thing. Hold on.
Well, I can send you a packet. We are recruiting.
Oh, good. You know. Now, is this like the you are God, or there's like an alien God somewhere? Because I'm going to need to know who I'm going to be, you know.
I am the alien God.
Oh, okay. See, that makes total sense.
Yeah. So, you know, and it's flexible depending on, you know, how pliable people are, which, you know, I think very pliable these days. I think we could do it. So.
Honestly, yeah, I think we're, God, at this point, we're just looking for things to, just something solid. I don't even care what it is at this point.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you just got to have a big enough TikTok following. You already got a cult, so.
Pretty much. I mean, Taylor Swift has her own, and God love her for it. I got to tell you, the woman, I've got nothing but good things to say about her, but man, yeah, she could. All she has to do is just click it over just a little bit more, and she's got herself a full-blown cult, and nobody would even care.
Right. Well, she's like, you know, maybe storming the Capitol isn't a bad idea, and everyone would be like, yeah, let's go.
We would have Swifties in the masses.
Yeah, just every just like sparkles and confetti spray everywhere across the Capitol. It'd be fabulous.
It'd be the most delightful insurrection you've ever had.
Yeah, like that adorable insurrection. we are living in wild times where people are pliable and people are also grasping for something. It's a weird time because like I feel like we live in a time where we have access to everything, but everyone is an idiot, right? Like everyone is dumb. Everyone is dumbed down, but we have access to it all. And I think that might be part of the problem is like, we're not meant to be able to have this much information. Like humans just can't wrap our heads around it. Like just genetically, you know, it's like there's a name for this number where you're only supposed to know about 150 people. It's like what you can, hold on. I got to look this up.
I'm curious.
It's not the Fibonacci sequence. Dunbar's number. That's what they call it. Dunbar's number, which is they did a study that suggests that people are really only able to know like 150 people. That's kind of our max out. And you know, so many people are family, then you've got friends, then you've got associates and other people. But that was kind of like your tribe. Genetically, you'd know that many people
about
in your,
that number, yeah.
Yeah, and we now we can know everyone, and like our brains just overload, and they don't even know where to start, and we just freak out.
It's so wild, and then it's really been an interesting shift. I mean, maybe we've always been this way, and I'm just not seeing it, but it's this echo chamber phenomenon of just now we're at a point where we kind of not only are we wired to really only hear the things that we already inherently agree with,
yeah,
but there's a whole other algorithm that's like, yeah, here's only the things you agree with. And we're forcing ourselves into these little boxes. And, it's just, it's one of the things that I wish everybody could just magically get one day. It's like, hey, no, we all want the same thing. Yeah. Like, we do realize, like, we want peace. We generally hate war. We generally hate the idea of starvation. We want to make money. We want to be prosperous. We want our kids to grow up in a better world than we grew up in.
Yeah.
And yet it's turned into this weird, bizarre kind of separation that just, when you actually look at it, doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think that is? How do you think that,
Do you want me to put my conspiracy hat on this early into the show?
Sure. Yeah. Let's go. I'm going to be getting my... you're already halfway into the cult, so.
Okay, good. So this is just my audition.
Yeah.
I'll work my way up to leadership slowly.
Yeah, we're gonna need a good lieutenant, so.
Look, dude, a hypnotherapist is a really good one to have on your side.
That is true.
If you're gonna be controlling people's minds, you wanna do it correctly.
That's right.
Which I'll get into that in like half a second because somebody's going to clip that and be like, oh my God, hypnosis is mind control. No, it's not. It's not. It's not.
It's not. Wink, wink. I got you. I get what you're saying. It's not for legal reasons.
Where are we going? Conspiracy theories? What's happening?
Yeah.
It's really, so part of the reason that I do what I do actually is because the more in tune people are with their own selves, the less afraid they are to feel their own emotions, the less triggers they have that are related to past traumas, past belief systems, the more independent they become, the more free they become, mm-hmm. the more able to think critically they are. And because people are easily manipulated by their emotions.
Yeah.
And I went through a toxic marriage. So that's, I think, kind of where I got this fascination of like, you know, breaking out of manipulation. But it's really interesting to see what's been going on with the media, the politicians, and, you know, honestly, a lot of just social media and all of that. Even the algorithms, like our attention-driven economy, really plays up with sparking people's emotions.
Yeah.
And for myself, it's my belief that if you can say, you know, so a lot of people get their strings pulled by, well, if you don't want to feel unsafe, then you better do this. Or if you want to feel like, if you don't want to come up against that not enough feeling that's been plaguing you, you better buy this.
Yeah.
And really, if you can sit back and say, cool deal, dude, I just had coffee and donuts with my fear this morning, bring it.
Yeah.
Then you're less easily pulled around. And that, I think, is where I would love to see people get to, because I think right now there's a lot of people profiting from us being detached from ourselves.
I agree with you 100%. I think that is very accurate. I always say, like, where do you even start, though? Because, you know, the people who are pulling the strings aren't going to let go. The people who are getting their strings pulled, most of them, if you really break it down, would probably tend to agree on some level that, you know, there's manipulation with social media and this is bad and there's a divide. And then as soon as that conversation is over, they go right back into their hole of what they believe in, their echo chamber, and letting the media control them and direct them. And, you know, when I say media, I don't even mean just the news, but media as entertainment as a whole, you know, in general. Yeah. So whether it's, you know, Hollywood, books, what's on, you know, what's come, you know, your algorithm, everything, I think is designed to, at this point, really kind of control the masses.
Yeah. And I think in my understanding of it, and I am in no way a social sciences expert, but, my personal philosophy is that the more the individual reconnects to themselves, so the more the individual heals, let's say, again, you don't want to be, you know, it's healing the belief systems, healing those triggers. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people will go to the ends of the effing earth. Oh, wait, I can say the fuck. I can say fuck on the show. This isn't edited.
You can. Let's go.
Slight tangent. I defy you to find a more versatile word in the English language than the F word. It's a noun. It's a verb. It's a curse. It's a celebration.
Yeah.
I love it. But no, so anyway, so I think it comes down to a healing at the individual level. When you heal at the individual level and when you have that level of personal awareness, then you're more able to see other people for what they are.
Yeah.
And I think kind of one of the, okay, again, getting kooky on you here. The fact about humans is it's either an act of love or it's a cry for love. Those are pretty much the two basic motivators. So if we were to be able to see that within ourselves, get that, you know, to a moderate level of going, okay, wait, I am in control of my own destiny. I am in control of my own life. I do have, you know, the personal power to at least alter the way I see the world. Then we start altering our interactions with people.
Yeah.
That's one less person who's been a dick to someone at Starbucks. That's one less person who is, you know, going to, you know, call out of work. And there's a chain reaction, and kind of my own perspective is the more okay we are being individuals, the more we can kind of go back into society with a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? We can go back into society and not be so brainwashed by society.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you're right. I think I always come back to in these conversations and when I'm talking about with people or in my own head thinking about it, is like, where do you even start? And, you know, you can start with people individually, like I'm sure you're doing, but it just, and, you know, maybe this is the fatalist in me or the cynic in me, but so often I just feel like, is the horse just too far out of the barn, you know? Because, like, you can start chipping away and getting people, but I think that cloud has moved so quickly and spreads so fast. This virus, like this mind virus, spreads so fast through our this culture and social media that, you know, in the time it takes to get one person out of it, you know, 10 more people have been captured. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, you're not wrong on that. Like, so it, honestly, the cards are stacked against it. And okay, it's kind of like, Here's the thing. I have a great amount of hope for humanity. I think that it's going to get worse before it gets better. Just like kind of after it, there's cycles of this. Mm-hmm. I heard this from Tony Robbins. I don't know if he came up with it, but soft people create bad times. Bad times create hard people. Hard people create good times. Did I say that right?
No, I don't know if you said, I always fuck it up too, but I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
we might be in the, you know, we've softened up a lot. We've had a lot of good, you know, we've had a lot of complacency that's been kind of, you know, crackling. And now we might need to get our ass kicked a little bit. But I think when people get so done being isolated, so done suffering, so done just being so angry about everything.
Yeah.
There's a point where it's just like, enough is enough, dude. Like, something needs to change, and evidently the world's not going to change, so I better. So yeah. I think that kind of is the effect that might end up happening, but I think you're right. It kind of might get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I mean, I just see it constantly, you know, and I don't know, you know, I can deal with myself. I can deal with those directly around me. But, you know, it's, I hate to say it, because I was, love to converse and talk to people that have different walks of life and points of view. And, you know, I felt like you could do that and there was camaraderie and you could come together on things. And now it's like, you got to be in this box. And if you're not in this box 100%, you're outside of the box. And then you're in it's just like these little, again, the echo chambers, and it doesn't allow for anyone to penetrate those with any type of, you know, you could get 99% of the way with someone, and then that 1% can be enough to be like, you know, we've separate and you're a Nazi, or you're a communist, or whatever the, you know, whatever the derogatory box they want to put you in is.
Well, I mean, and as a comic, you're fighting a battle that honestly has been really rough. It's been so rough for the entertainment industry in general, that whole like Trump, COVID, I don't know. It's really, what's your experience been like? Cause from my end, we always see what we're exposed to. So I'm seeing people that do want to heal, that do want to change, that do want to grow. But I also realized that comics got it really effing hard when the cancel culture thing started coming in. And my own personal belief is comics kind of have like this sacred duty to poke fun at things, to illuminate things, to say those things that get those conversations started in a lighthearted way so that you can break those barriers. But what's your experience been like?
Well, you know, and that's, as for me, I always said, I'm like, either, you know, everything's on the table or nothing is. Because people can't start picking and choosing their moral line. Because if you asked everyone to tell you where their line is, it's going to be different, you know? So if I walk into a comedy club and there's 300 people there, it's like everyone has a different idea on what is appropriate and what's not, you know? So it's like, how am I supposed to cater to all those people? And why should I? Why is your moral line better than their moral line? Why is, you know, like someone will get mad, you know, the same people that'll call these other people snowflakes will get mad if you make a joke about Trump or religion, you know. And it's like, but also then, you know, these people who get mad when you will talk about a marginalized group will sit there and tell, you know, make fun of other groups that they feel, you know, whatever, in their opinion, have it good or have had it good too long. Like, you know, again, I always say, like, I'm Latino, so like I had this joke for a long time that like the person I feel worst for in America right now is the straight white male, because like they're the last bastion of people who just nobody gives a shit about. And like, I get it, you know, they've had it real good for a real long time, okay? Like, I get it, historically they're like the LeBron James of, they fucking nailed it.
I love how you compared a straight white male to LeBron
right,
James.
Yeah, like, he's just, you know, the best. But like, I, you know, like, I get that they've had a dynasty, some may even say.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, but like, there's so many of people in that group that are like, that want to be allies and want to be on the right side of things and are trying to do, you know, or have none of those ideals of that, you know, these people are rallying against. And I'm like, all you're doing is, you know, alienating and berating these people. And then they have to sit there and either take it and feel beaten down, or you're going to weaponize them and turn them into extremists on the other end because you push them so hard. And I'm like, it's, you know, treat people as individuals, not as these big groups. That's kind of isn't that just bigotry in a different form, you know?
Yeah. And okay. And as a female, like, I gotta tell you, I've been seeing a lot more dudes. Like men are some of my best clients. And as I'm learning, because I was initially pretty sketched out about working with men, yeah. You know, I didn't have a great experience with one of them. Notice I say one. But at the same time, I've had so many other great experiences with male friends, and I'm learning, like, my heart goes out to guys. I mean, yes, the straight white male, but also just men in general, because it's, you know, on one hand, women have been kind of like taught throughout our lives, like how to deal with emotions, how to share emotions, how to be there for someone with emotions. It seems to me like in the millennial generation and in, like, especially in the millennial generation, for the first half of your lives, and please correct me if I'm wrong, men were for the most part taught, you clench your jaw, you don't be a bitch, you suck it up, you don't show emotion unless it's happiness or anger. Those are the only two you're allowed to show. Anything else is bitch behavior. And then all of a sudden, like within the last 10 years, we've effing flipped it on you.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, no, we want you to be more vulnerable. We want you to share your emotions. We want you to do this. We want you to go to therapy. And it's kind of not fair.
Well, not only that, I mean, we're also talking about literally hundreds of thousands of years of genetic wiring.
Yeah.
You know, which is another thing people, you know, call me crazy. Men and women are different, but we're different. We're different for, and that's not a bad thing. We're different for a reason, like, you know, because they bring different things to the table that create a whole. You know, they're two pieces that where one lacks, the other picks up. Women are much better in general, like emotionally, like you said. That's just I think that's why you guys are better, why they have the kids and raise the kids, you know, it's historically, because that, you know, women are emotionally, have a much higher EQ in my opinion than men do. They're more in touch with it. So when children have needs, they can sync up with that faster. Men are just kind of pragmatic. Like we're like a Swiss Army knife, you know. We're very utilitarian. You know,
what needs to be fixed, I fix it, we're good. Yeah, right.
Don't ask me how I feel about it. You know. So it's just it's gotten to a point where like that's demonized, you know, us being different and having different ideas. Like, no, you're just the same. It's like, I don't know, man, I don't think being the same is a good thing, you know. Like, I like the differences.
Yeah. And there's something about what I'm noticing is if a going into kind of like masculine and feminine energy for a second, masculine energy is actually like an action taker. Masculine energy plans, masculine energy like finds the solutions. You guys think of, you know, you guys create the solutions. And masculine giving is actually like kind of a key. And I noticed that when men are forced too much into maybe a feminine role of, you know, receiving, or of, you know, being the creative ones or the ones that are more emotionally, you know, that are supposed to be more emotional, it really just is not, it's I've noticed a lot of men that have experienced that kind of treatment and a shift that are trying to adapt to being somebody that they're not. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. If you're an emotional man, fuck yeah. Like that's not exclusive to gender. For myself, I have not a maternal bone in my body. I do not speak child. I'm like looking at this infant like, use your words. A baby giraffes are running by now. You're about like three weeks old. Come on.
Yeah, cut the cord. Come on.
But at the same time, you know, there is something to be said for we offer different things to each other for different reasons. You're absolutely right. And to just totally ask somebody to negate not only what they've been taught, but who they desire to be, it's not helpful. It's just not fucking helpful.
Yeah, in trying to like homogenize everyone to the same thing just kind of, I think, makes all of us useless to a point, you know, and kind of all of us inert instead of having being, you know, it sounds so cliche, you know, makes me sound like a fucking boomer or something, which I shouldn't. I hate.
Oh, even, no, we can't be a boomer here. That's the other group that we can't have.
I hate even saying that term because it's become such a fucking like fucked out, stupid insult. But like, you know, when I. Growing up, I had a lot of friends, you know, I barely even saw white people until I was like in my mid-teens, right, and moved out of the hood. It was all Latinos and black people and Filipinos, and we all mixed together and hung out, and our differences were, we talked about our differences, we made fun of our differences, we were friends because and in spite of our differences, we, you know, it's like. And now it's like, no, you know, you can't talk about the difference. You can't talk about anything that you aren't. And you can't, you know, you have no comment on it. Or you can't, don't, you're culturally appropriated. And I'm like, well, do you guys all want us to get along and be together? Or do you want us to, you're like, there, it's a new form of, like, the new form of segregation is making sure everyone else is separate in their boxes. You know, it's like, hey, right. Yeah, instead of just being like, hey, we're all together doing our thing, it's kind of all, it's cool, it's fine.
I mean, yeah, and I understand that there's been, we're carrying over a lot of just, you know, mistakes, but I think there seems, and here's the thing, when I was young, I was angry too. Like when I was in like Gen Z's shoes,
yeah,
I wanted change immediately. And now that I'm all like, oh, okay, changing things doesn't happen overnight. And, but at the same time, you know, I'm white. Am I only limited to the chicken dance? Like, right. May I only have In-N-Out burger for the rest of my days?
It could be worse on the burger, but yeah. Yeah, you know, exactly. Yeah. I mean, what do you, you know, it's like, you just, you only get to watch Friends on reruns for the night.
Evidently, that and Frasier, man, I'm stuck.
Yeah. Yeah. But
yeah, it's, and I, there's kind of, you're right, we're kind of going back to tribalism a little bit. We're kind of going back to, this is mine, you can't have it, and or, and when I was taking yoga teacher training, which I have done nothing with, by the way, that was, but one of the teachers said to me, it always struck me. She goes, okay, the oppressed, the people who are truly oppressed are not the ones talking about it on social media because they're too busy trying to figure out how to get out of their oppression. Like they're too busy dealing with life. It's, you know, for the most part, these, you know, and I'm going to choose my words very carefully here. suburban white women seem to be spearheading what we can and cannot do. And again, like, you know, kind of suburban Gen Z that hasn't really experienced the joy of just getting together and having a cup of coffee with somebody who is totally different than you and not making that the center focus.
Well, right. Yeah. Like, so this is a great example of this, that a while back, someone in the City Council of LA, I forget his name, but he's one of the more prominent guys. Not sure if anyone's aware, LA has a couple issues right now. there's a myriad of things, homelessness being maybe one of the bigger ones. The city's borderline unusable, in my opinion, these days. And the city council member was saying that like it's getting really bad, and the mayor's not doing anything, and the homeless problem, the drugs, the violence, the theft, you know, the people who are living there just can't just deal what they're dealing with every day, you know. Yeah, anything under $1,000, they're not even going to chase you down or prosecute you. So the people are walking to stores just stealing whatever, and they're people are closing down stores. And Seth Rogen, comedian, actor, tweets, well, I live in LA. I don't think it's that bad, this and that. I'm like, yeah, that's easy to say from your fucking gated community on the hill, you piece of shit. Like, you don't live in this city. You live in a gated community. Yeah. You have security. You fly on private jets. You take a helicopter to LAX and go through the fucking private water. Like, you don't have to live a normal life, you know? So it's all the people who never have to experience anything that have a lot of hard opinions on stuff. Like, again, as a Latino in this country, when the term Latinx came up and people started using that, I'm like, I don't know any Latino, male, female, or otherwise, in between, that is like, yeah, Latinx. We want to be called Latinx, not Latina or Latino. None of them. I know zero. I've met zero. And I know a lot of Latinos.
it's almost like we've had nothing to do. People were not meant to be kept in captivity. I don't care what your thoughts were on COVID, or not your thoughts in particular. I'm actually very curious. But the general, I don't care what the thoughts were on COVID. People were not meant to be kept in captivity because we came up with crazy shit like this.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, you know what? Things, you know, we need to make words different. But the problem is, the language has a meaning, and especially, again, very, very, very limited Spanish on my end. But there's actually a definite purpose to Latino, Latina. There's a masculine, there's a feminine. Right. There's a whole thing that if we just say, hey, we'll call it Latinx, you're denying one of the most, like, you know, one of the beautiful key points of language.
Right. Yeah, it's culturally incorrect and it's linguistically incorrect. So you've now, but then it makes white people, you know, feel better.
It makes us feel better about ourselves. We feel like we're doing something. We're not going to actually fix anything right now. We're just going to, you know, we're going to be more politically correct.
it's like one of my favorite ones that's come up recently is it's insensitive to call them homeless. They're called unhoused. And I'm like, okay, let's break down the suffix and prefix of both those words. So homeless, prefix, home, domicile, place to live. Less, meaning not having that, you don't have that. Okay, unhoused. Well, the suffix of that is housed. Home. Un, meaning without. It's the same fucking word. It's the same fucking word. But now it makes people feel better to say unhoused. If you say homeless, that's insensitive. I'm like, you're saying the same word. And also, that person still doesn't have a place to live. So.
Right. It doesn't. So does making us feel better about it actually. Okay. So I'm also of the belief here. Like, so suffering is not necessary. The idea that, and suffering just comes from the idea that, well, this shouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, you know, but I will say there is a purpose to it because it wakes us the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point, we're going to say, okay, things are too bad. Something needs to change. And that's when we start changing individually. That's when society starts changing. But if we keep softening language, if we keep softening, you know, how we treat things. And I'm a very weasel word person myself. I don't like to just tackle things on. I do like to be a little bit nicer. Californians, I'm sorry, we're not as blunt as the East Coasters and the Midwesterners. We will. But at the same time, if you soften language up too much, making yourself feel better doesn't actually change the situation. And it keeps you in this kind of like sleepy state where you don't really feel the need to take action.
Yeah.
To tackle it head on, even if that means through language. Maybe it stings a little more, but that sting is going to inspire action sooner rather than later.
Yeah, it's like we've just forgot. I think we forgot about what real action is, and it's very easy to just kind of, people just want to appear to be doing the right thing. So if I say the right words, if I tweet the right thing, then I can sleep well at night. I've actually done nothing. you know. And I always want, you know, I always want to remind people when they start getting up on their high horse about certain social issues. I'm like, okay, just remember, you're tweeting that from a phone that was made from literal slave labor. So, you know, so
maybe a little self-aware.
Yeah, it's like,
oh God, that's such a good point.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, I get it. We got to pick and choose our spots. We can't do everything, but also, like, you know, you have to admit you're complicit. And if you're complicit, then maybe back off of that high horse a little bit. And, you know, I'm not saying don't take action towards things, but maybe don't point the finger quite as much at everyone else.
I think also that kind of comes from this sudden pressure for everyone to be an activist. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if you are not actively taking a side, you are not doing anything. But the problem is not everybody is an activist. There's like, for myself, I'm a healer. You will not see me at a protest. That's just not where my energy goes. And honestly, if you're at a protest, I don't get anything done. Like, I am just not the kind of person that mobilizes people. My little, you know, channel is to work with the movers and the shakers and work with the people who are doing the things, work with the people who are building their businesses or doing whatever so that they can be their best selves. Yeah. There are teachers, there are entertainers who can craft a story in such a way that it means something to someone. There are communicators, there are activists, there are people who really are good at mobilizing action. But if everybody is being pressured to be an activist, we're gonna get a flood of just words and bullshit because everybody feels the need to do something, but they're not being encouraged to do something the way that actually fits them best.
Yeah.
I don't know what you think.
Yeah, well, and I think that also people have greatly over exaggerated what their actions accomplish. meaning like, again, everyone is happy to tweet something shows they're on the right side of things, or you know, put a black square as their Instagram mm-hmm. picture or whatever the thing, or like Free Palestine is the fucking, you know, as their Facebook banner. And I'm like, that's great. Point it out on a map. You don't actually care. It just makes you feel better. And it's a signal of like, hey, I'm on the right side of things. It's like, great. What have you actually done?
In the big grand scheme of things, we don't know. There are people who supported Nazi Germany who really thought that they were doing, you know, the best thing.
Yeah.
And we only kind of like figure out what was the right side of things in retrospect.
Right.
But yeah, it's, if you don't have the education on the issue, and here's the thing, I don't speak a lot on political issues because I don't have the education. We're talking kind of lightly now, and I'm just talking about human psychology because that's what I know. But really, I don't know enough to speak on it. So my words are just adding to the slush and probably not even helping anyone of real value. And I love your perspective on that. Like, point it out on a map. Do something. Because again, it's almost trendy to just pick a side, whether or not you actually believe it if you knew the full details.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, we're actually not even getting the full information.
We're
getting a very curated version of the information depending on who we're likely to side with. So we don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the big thing. And then it, you know, then there's the divide and then it just keeps us separated. So, so what do you, let's hone down on you, Chelsea. What do you do that's very big scale, obviously. not to be reductive, but I don't know how much you can do on that whole scale.
Not much. If I can heal my little corner of the world, and if somebody ends up doing something big in the world, I'll have considered my life accomplished.
There you go.
So on the individual level, like I said, one of my big things is, you know, helping people free themselves. So if you think about it, if we were totally logical creatures, we'd be able to look at our past and say, okay, that was in the past. That was, you know, that was either a different me entirely, or at least I'm here now and I'm safe and I'm good and I'm different. But we're not totally logical creatures.
No, we're not.
As we've just been talking about for the past hour. It's almost like there's this little emotional rubber band that just kind of keeps snapping us back almost before we can catch it. And all of a sudden, you know, something triggers us and we're 6 years old again. And it's not intentional, it's not conscious, but it's unconscious. Mm-hmm. So with the hypnosis aspect of what I do, it is largely trusting the client's unconscious mind to show what really is the source of the anxiety that's presenting in the modern day. Sometimes it's something that they are conscious of, like I was bit by a dog, now I'm anxious. Sometimes it's something super subtle, like I was left in a grocery store when I was a kid. I thought I was over it, but something did something. So that is a big part of what I do, is kind of healing the emotional connection to the past. And what that does is it heals, it gives my clients an experience of healing rather than, you know, kind of just talking in circles around it. A lot of what I do is also intuitive. We've talked all this much about it, but I do channel when I am in session. So sometimes something comes through for my client and I don't know why the heck I'm saying it, but it resonates with them, which is just so fun to watch Source kind of show off. And I don't know why I got so caught up in the big conversation that we just had that I totally, you know, forgot my elevator pitch. So
that's
I hope
okay.
that answered your question.
Yeah. So, I mean, where do you even start with people? Because I assume everyone's different, but I mean, what's kind of, as you start honing in on these things, are you finding a common thread that people these days are that's keeping them back from being more, emotionally in tune? Or
some of it is, you know, a big chunk of it is in some way the feeling of not being enough. And I think, you know, partially how we're raised can contribute to that. But a lot of modern culture is just constantly screaming at people, you're not enough. You're not doing enough. You're not an activist. You're not enough of a man. You're not enough of a woman. You're not enough of a human. And so a lot of times what I'm seeing is that's a big theme that we end up healing in session. And that's a big cause of anxiety.
Yeah.
This constant scramble of I have to be more, I have to do more, I have to hold it all together. There's a lot of people who are very sensitive to other people's energy and emotions, and you know, they call them empaths. I try not to get too woo-woo with it. My industry can attract a lot of kooks. I've never used
too.
A pocket watch on anyone. there is a very real thing going on with how tense things have been and how divided things have been. There's a lot of people who are emotionally and energetically sensitive that are feeling all of that going on around them and not realizing that it's getting picked up.
Yeah.
So a lot of my work is energy work. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of the way that I work is it's kind of like therapy for people who don't like talking about feelings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if it tends to get to the root of things a lot quicker when I just trust what comes up rather than trying to get people talking about it. I could geek out about this all day. it's really, it's fun. I gotta say, it's absolutely fun because in my own life, another common thread that I'm finding is there's people who have tried traditional methods, self-help books, therapy, talking, and they just haven't gotten to the real issue.
Yeah.
I was always one of those people that I could talk to a therapist and I was so hyper analytical of myself. I could analyze myself in an entire session and the therapist would be like, well, sounds like you figured it out there, but I didn't. I was just talking my way in circles around it. But again, I could totally justify and logic logicify everything. So it wasn't until I kind of researched hypnosis and got to the actual truth of what was going on and what was causing my codependence that I was like, oh shit, it had nothing to do with my parents. I was friends with the school bully. Yeah. And that, you know, it's so much, you know, the natural thing that we think is like, oh, okay, well, it must have been, you know, your childhood somewhere and how your parents raised you. No, my parents were great. It was all of my school, but I had so been like, you know, okay, it must have been my family. I don't know what happened here. And it actually spun me even further. So yeah, it's, I don't know. I'm just kind of an impatient person. I don't like to waste a lot of time. So this just, my practice is a blend of all of the most effective therapies that helped me, when I was just overthinking myself into oblivion.
Yeah. I mean, at what point were you inspired to move into it yourself? I mean, obviously those things, you kind of had the realization that those things were a unique blend of what helped you, it sounds like. How did you, yeah, when were you kind of at the point where like, oh, how do I apply this to other people now?
Yeah. So this, so actually I kind of, it's funny, I moved out to the Bible Belt and became a kook. So I moved out and my former marriage was very toxic, a lot of mental and emotional manipulation. And so I had lost myself. And I was always, as someone who was codependent, I was really good. I was really good, Deese, at figuring out what people wanted from me, shoving myself into a little box, mm-hmm. and then pretending that that was myself. I had convinced myself of that. Dude, I had myself convinced that I was a fan of the Aquabats for an entire year.
That's bad. That's a come to Jesus moment right there.
It's a come to Jesus moment for sure.
You're like, oh, you're following them on tour. You're on their 18th city. You're like, what the fuck am I doing? Where are
these? Thank God I never spent, you know, hey, if you like the Aquabats, we'll have words. But I can't even bring myself to apologize for that. But anyway, so here I am in this, like, my mind is just warped from, you know, narcissism and my own codependence. So I started learning energy healing. I met a life coach who later became my mentor, and she introduced me to what the hell I was doing in the first place and getting more in tune with myself. And I have a lot of techniques that I learned from her that I put into my practice. Mm-hmm. And then when I finally got divorced, I still had all these thoughts in my head that I couldn't stop thinking. I knew they weren't true. I knew they weren't helpful. I knew they weren't even mine. And I was like, this feels like I've been hypnotized. Yeah. And so I, you know, went on ye old Google and found the guy who later became my mentor in hypnosis specifically. And dude, I had one session and one follow-up with him, and I never thought the same way again. Hmm. And then like 4 months later, I met the guy that I'm dating now, and we're 4 years strong. It's the healthiest, most peaceful relationship I've ever had. So when I figured out like how effective it was and like, oh, holy shit, I've been going to therapy for years. I've been doing all this for years and nothing has touched it. And then all of a sudden, you know, two sessions and I'm a different person.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I have to learn this. So yeah. And then after that, it's just been kind of one after the other, just reinforcing it, just hearing the stories of my clients. Like that's what gives me purpose and that's what gives me peace. And it is just, it's just a wild ride. It's so fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think you mentioned something in there where it's like, you know, finding this thing that worked for you and finding yourself in it. And it's like, I think that's something we run into so often now that I don't think anyone takes the time to get to know themselves. And without that, you can't start to find healthy relationships and, you know, find a healthy life and find your happiness. You've got to, and, you know, through therapy, you know, intuitive hypnotherapy, however it works for someone, but this like tuning in on you and getting to know the real you makes such a big difference. I think other people are just so lost, checked out, willfully checked out. It's easier to just be in the, you know, just get pushed along with what people, you know, the life, you know, the way of life. What we get up, I work this job, I watch these shows at night, then I go to bed and I do, you know, it's like instead of having a thought of being like, well, you know, break out of that, do this, do that, and start to find you, because I think it's scary. I think that's the big thing. I've always thought that I think a lot of people don't ever find themselves because it's scary as shit to to get into your own head and dig around. But like, I've always told people, I'm like, you know, it may seem tough, but and it may be a tough like year, 18 months even, right? But after that, the rest of your life until you die is exponentially easier.
Right. And I wish, I wish that more people understood that. I wish I could convey it as beautifully as you just did. Because there's like this fear of, okay, cool. If I decide to go dig around, either A, people think that what they're going to find is going to just destroy them. Like, oh my God, yeah. I had this big thing. And they think it's going to hang around. No. The point of opening the closet and seeing what's in there is so that you can clean it. So when you find that personal power, and when you do separate yourself from the person that maybe your parents want you to be, or the person that you thought you should be because it would make money and give you a secure life, or the person that you thought you should be for this relationship because you thought it'd give you a secure relationship, it sucks. I mean, hey, my self discovery journey ended in divorce. I had to move. I had to cut everything. And the funny thing is, that same week that I asked for a divorce, I also stopped working for a person who was also incredibly toxic. Like my entire life, like in 3 weeks, just gone. And I will say it was rough, but even through that, it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
It was oddly, you know, there were some emotional moments, absolutely. But sure. I gotta say, I look back at the journey and like, there wasn't any one part of it where I was suffering more than I was when I had decided to just numb myself out and be someone else. I think that, you know, there's kind of this fear of like, oh, well, great. If I start working on myself, the work will never end. The journey never ends, sure. But the work gets easier. And when you realize that you are in power in your own life and you do. That means that you have to take responsibility for the rest of your life. That means like, okay, I'm never going to be able to pass the buck and say it's the president or say it's the media. I'm going to have to take responsibility for how I live my life. But then, dude, you're free.
Right.
If you say, okay, I did this, then you have the ability to change it just as easily.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't trade this life that I have for anything. I wouldn't go back to the old life. I'm grateful for the old life that I had. I'm grateful to old Chels, but I gotta tell you, I wouldn't trade this life that I have for anything, even though, I had to give up being angry. I had to give up being cynical. Yeah. It just kind of fell off, which meant the death of my own comedy career because I lost my funny. But I was really funny when I was pissed.
Yeah, I'm sure it's still there. Come on.
When I am pissed, I'm like a little floofed up rooster. I just, stomp back and forth and start making obscure. Like, I am going to kick that person in the shins. Like, just, but at the same time, again, my life is so good now. I wouldn't trade it. And I'm sure you'd agree when you start really actually loving who you are, not who you think you should be, the world opens up for you in a way that you would have never expected.
Yeah, there's a freedom that I think people are. But I think, again, that's part of the intellectual and the emotional capture of so many people is that the freedom can be scary because you do then have to be responsible and autonomous for what you're doing, when you're doing it, how you're doing it. You're not just following the directions. You know, I think we saw it during COVID was a great example of it, with people just following the directions and, you get a little bit of money, they get a little, just stay in your house, don't rock the boat, here's a little bit of money, here's a little food, stay home and watch, Tiger King.
I couldn't even, that one was too much for me. But and again, it's kind of that question of, okay, cool, do you want, not even talking financially, but do you want to live on other people's circumstances? Do you always want to be pulled around by what's going on around you? Or do you want to learn to surf the waves?
Yeah.
Do you want to, okay, great. That means you might wipe out. That means you might take some risks. That means, oops. But even with the responsibility, even with the quote unquote burden of responsibility, again, every single time there's that quick moment of, ugh, yeah, that was me. Oh, that was me. What do I do different?
Yeah. Yeah. It's taking the reins of your own life and really taking control. You know, from a very young age, I used to do this thing where I would take trips by myself for weeks and weeks and weeks at a time. And it was just, I would take, this was before, you know, I had a laptop, you know, 20 plus years ago. I'd take just pen and paper, and I'd go somewhere where I didn't know anyone, and I would travel, and I would just write my thoughts, be in my head all day, think about my thoughts, process stuff. And I do it once a year, and just the amount of stuff I figured out, and then ideas I'd come up with, because you're just, you declutter and you know, you just realize what you want, what makes you happy, and how powerful you actually are, instead of just being pushed along with the turd.
That is the exact phrase that I would use from now on. It is. And you know, it's also, there are some people that really are like perfectly at peace with that, and good deal. That's your path. For myself, I just never, I lived my life for other people for so long that I refused to do it one more second.
Yeah. So for people who are considering something like this, what would you say to them? How, and if they wanted to reach you for this, how would they do that?
Yeah. My thoughts would be, you know, the funny thing is my people tend to find me. So if something in this podcast resonated with you and, you know, you feel like I would be a good fit, jump on my website, www.chelseaalberthealing.com, and shoot me a little contact form, shoot me a message, and just let me know that you'd like to book a consultation. You can also, you can work with me one-on-one, or I have also just launched the Catalyst membership, which is kind of a passion project of mine, where if a one-on-one session isn't financially in the cards, this is a way to access a library of hypnosis audios, journal prompts that, you know, I use with my own clients to get them thinking about things in a different way, as well as bi-weekly intuitive coaching calls where, you know, we sit and we chat and answer your questions. So there's a lot of different ways to work with me. And I would just, again, say that if you are my people, you probably already know it, and I probably already know you're my people. So feel free to reach out and just say hi.
All right. Chelsea, anything else you want to say before we get out of here?
No, I am just super grateful for where this conversation went. Deez, I've loved talking to you. This was so fun for me. Yeah. And absolutely. Just keep doing this, man, because there's some really cool conversations that are happening in your podcast, and I'm grateful to be a part of it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you being here, and love to do it again sometime. This is great. You were fun. So,
aw, thanks. Yeah. That's what they all say. Yeah.
Well, I thought this was special, but never mind then. All right, guys. Well, for our listeners, please follow Chelsea. Check out our website. If you think this might be something that would be helpful for you, give it a goog. Check it out. Drop her a contact form. And at the very least, you know, do something for yourself today. Find a little you in your day. So that's it, guys. And again, as for me, go to deezcomedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network, live shows, dates coming up. And we are going to get out of here for today. So for the Social Hour, I've been Deez. And for Chelsea, thank you very much. And we will see you all next week.